We'll call a meeting to order. I understand we're one member short of a quorum. Representative Davids, you do know how to make an entrance. We now have a quorum with the former chair of the Commerce Committee. We'll take the minutes. Representative Woodard moves the minutes of the last meeting, January 23rd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Sanders, you're up. House File 129, moved by Representative Sanders to be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
I don't have anything.
It's my understanding, Representative Sanders, that you have the DE-2 and that is an author's amendment. Is that in fact correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, and it puts the bill in the shape that the author would prefer.
Then Representative Sanders moves the DE-2 amendment.
I apologize. Apparently it's just coming around. I don't know if it's in the packets.
We are moving the amendment. We'll wait just a moment until everybody has the amendment in hand. Representative Sanders, if you want to, I'm assuming we're going to take an author's amendment because we have never failed to in this committee. But if you want to describe the bill with the author's amendment in mind, and then we'll take the amendment once everybody's had a chance to look at it. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this DE 2 amendment actually makes this bill much simpler. In fact, puts it in the, from what I understand, form that those of us that were here last year saw and passed through this committee, made it to the general register, I think without objection. We just ran out of time, is what I recall. But this deals with mortgage originators and basically puts them into the same classification as all their foreclosure consultants.
And thank you, Representative Sanders. Does everybody have the DE-2? Well, all right. We'll just pause and wait till it. But I see you've got a testifier with you, Representative Sanders, to Mr. Elwood. Do you want to be heard from relative to the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. I want to very much thank Representative Sanders for carrying this bill this year. This bill was carried last year, bipartisan bill. It, as Representative Sanders said, it just didn't make it. The gist of it is this, that we have a significant number of clients that have used loan modification services, fee-for-service enterprises, and of course some can do a good job for consumers, but others have proven to be not so helpful and have taken the money and really not provided the services. And a couple years ago the legislature tried to address that issue by adding some provisions to this chapter 325N. We, since that those protections were put in place, certain folks have been found out that if they just went and got a mortgage originator license, they could simply evade all the requirements. They didn't do any mortgage origination. They didn't provide any services in that arena. It was just a ruse to be able not to have to follow the rules. And what this bill does, and again, thank you, Representative Sanders, is simply says you just got to follow the rules, even if you have a license as a mortgage originator. And I want to be clear that it doesn't affect in any way the basic role of a mortgage originator. So it doesn't affect their ability to originate mortgages or do any refinancings or anything like that. It just has just would affect somebody doing a for-profit, a fee-for-service loan modification business. And I know several of the members sitting in the committee here heard this bill last year as well, and appreciate their support last year and appreciate it again this year.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Are there any questions for Mr. Elwood? Okay. Having distributed the author's amendment to the DE-2, Representative Sanders moves the DE-2 as an author's amendment, put the bill in the shape that the author would prefer to approve it or move forward with it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to House File 129 as amended? Seeing none, other questions or concerns from members of the committee?
Otherwise, Mr. Chair, just one quick thing. I just wanted to thank Mr. Pender for all the work he's done in a short amount of time trying to get this in shape. We found last minute a couple of glitches and just want to appreciate his work.
We have great regard for Mr. Pender in this committee, and thank you, Mr. Elwood. And thank you, by the way, to Representative Sanders and to the members of the minority for allowing me to depart slightly from the tradition that we honor in this committee of hearing a minority bill first. We obviously had an issue relative to the health insurance marketplace bill, but I appreciate your graciousness in doing that. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, he seemed to be very good and very knowledgeable on the subject area. I was just curious as to what committee he first testified in his life.
Mr. Elwood, when you were 11, what committee were you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, it actually was this committee right here in front of you, Representative Davids, as the then chair.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Elwood, you seem much more relaxed today. Is that true?
Mr. Elwood, we could change that in a hurry.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, you have a very good memory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
He has a good offer today. I don't know who the author was back then, but
it was probably me. No wonder he was nervous. Other questions or serious concerns? Seeing none, Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 129 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Thank you, Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chair,
thank
members.
You, Mr. Elwood. Good luck in civil law. Next up, we've got Commissioner Rothman in the Department of Commerce. As he's coming up with his team, we certainly welcome back Commissioner Rothman. This is the first time in at least recent memory that the Commerce Committee is both a policy and a finance committee. So I've asked the Commissioner to talk about both the operations as well as the high points of the budget, the Governor's proposed budget that were impactful with respect to the Department of Commerce. Commissioner Rothman, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. We have two handouts. I'll start with the smaller, and I don't know if you have those yet, or this is the one that has the, looks like this. It's sort of a fact sheet overview.
I'm sure they are on their way.
All right.
Oh, if I would just look through my folder, Commissioner.
That's okay.
We do have it. Thank you.
It's magic.
Mr. Chair, while we're searching for that, what's this big black binder? Very strange, very foreign.
Isn't that very impressive, Representative Poppy?
Just seems kind of out of place for this committee.
I know. We're not used to being quite so formal in here. We must have better staff this time around. I believe that some of the former staff are either in or around or listening.
Mr. Chairman, we had leather binders
and satchels, and yes, they came in by horseback. Commissioner Commissioner Rothman, we have found the in the left-hand pocket of the rather nice handouts or packets. We found the materials that you referenced.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's always a pleasure and good to see everybody. So I will start with this sort of fact sheet and services, what we do, and then I'll lead into the slides. But what we decided to do is sort of accumulate and give you sort of a sense of the scope and breadth and magnitude of what the department does. In terms of our financial services oversight, we regulate $53 billion of financial institution assets. That goes to our solvency, what we do maintaining the safety and soundness of our banks. We regulate $5.3 billion in securities investment advisor assets under management. The $258 billion in assets for insurance companies. We also license 348,000 individuals and entities in Minnesota through various parts of our department. There are about $130 million last year in savings that our energy rate review analysts achieved for Minnesota ratepayers. There were 163,000 Minnesotans that the department helped with low-income heating assistance through our LIHEAP program. There were 9,000 homes that were weatherized with the assistance of our staff and oversight administration. In terms of sort of the conservation side of on the energy side of the house, we saved about 980,000 megawatts of electricity through the conservation improvement plans. These are all the programs under statute, but our goals, but which we administer. The $2.8 million in natural gas, metric cubic feet. There's 10,000, over 10,000 investigations that our department did, and $19 million in returned money to 7,200 claimants in our unclaimed property unit. With the Petro Fund, we approved claims of $8 million, and then for the Minnesota Relay Service, that is for the those that are hard of hearing, we service 54,000 monthly calls for those. This is just a highlight, and it gives you sort of a sense of what we do in terms of the magnitude, but it doesn't describe everything that we do. A lot of our services, and many of you are familiar with the department, know that we advocate on behalf of the public interest. Our focus is to maintain the public interest. We provide education, licensure, compliance, enforcement protection for consumers. We regulate the insurance companies, the banks, securities, real estate, debt collection, mortgage. The list goes on. There's more than 20 plus industries that the Department of Commerce regulates in one way or another. I've talked already about the safety and soundness of the state banks, our insurance companies, and some of the utility work, but we also focus on, as many know, the broadband development as part of our a part of the work that we do, and then as well we have the weights and measures unit, which we'll get into in a little while as we look through the slides. But I thought this would be a good place to start to give you sort of the magnitude of some of the stuff that we do. We can then turn to the second handout, which has the more detailed slides in terms of, you know, the department's overview. I'll walk through sort of who we are, some of our key people, the divisions that are within the department, what they do at a very high level, and then as well, which will lead into and tee up for us the budget discussion in terms of what the governor's recommendation is. Again, the department focuses and prides itself on its mission. At the core, we make sure to strive for a strong, competitive, and fair marketplace in all of the parts and segments of the economy that the department works on and oversees. We and our staff, in many ways, work to protect the public interest. We also serve as a trusted public resource for information for you, for consumers, for anybody that calls the department, and to help advocate on behalf of consumers, whether they're any particular complaint or any interest that we have that we're working with, for example, a Public Utilities Commission or anything like that. If you turn the slide, the department, again, regulates more than 20-plus industries, the 350,000 professionals, the consumer services, and the public interest. And then as well, a large part of this will show is that we deliver a large part of the federal and state energy and telecommunications programs through our department on behalf of the state of Minnesota. In the next slide, I've laid out for you the leadership of the department. This is myself and then Deputy Commissioner and Chief of Staff, Emily Johnson. She recently stepped in December. With on the banking side, we have Mary Jo Wall, who last week stepped up to the acting deputy position. Many of you know Bill Horlitz. He retired at the end of last month. And Mary Jo has been with the department for well over 25 years, knows the banks and all of the the functions of examinations and everything there, so that we have a nice smooth transition. We do have a search committee that's working. which is collaborative. We have folks both on the private sector and at the department working to find a the next deputy commissioner at the department. And in the insurance area, Tim Vandehey is the deputy commissioner of insurance. Bill Grant is deputy commissioner of the Energy Resources Division. Within that area, too, we have an assistant commissioner, it's Dennis Ehlers. He focuses on not only just energy issues, but is also overseeing the telecommunications. There's a long background, actually, in telecommunications matters. Recently, we brought in Nancy Lepic as assistant commissioner of enforcement. Nancy came to us from the United States Department of Labor. She had she was one of the deputies out in Washington, but before that, she was she worked for the Department of Labor here in Minnesota for many years, and then before that at the Attorney General's office. We also then have the Director of Administrative Services and our Chief Financial Officer, who will join me on the budget presentation, Tim Janke. Those are the managers that help me on a day-to-day basis supervise all of the things that are happening at the department. And underneath them, we have approximately, I think it's right around the 320, something like that, current employees. It fluctuates depending upon our vacancies and everything that's happening. So then let's delve into each of these divisions. Many of you know these areas, but to just sort of refresh, and for those that don't, some of the key parts of what we do. The Financial Institutions Division regulates and examines several different financial institutions, the state chartered banks. Minnesota has the largest number of state chartered banks in the country. It is one of the key Main Street financial segments of our economy. It's been as we came out of the financial crisis back in 2007, it's one of the areas of primary concern for me to make sure we have oversight and regulation in terms of the safety and soundness of those banks. Just a couple of comments. I do believe that the indicators starting last fall, sort of in the middle of last year, started to turn positive in terms of the state of state chartered banks. Sort of coincides with how the economy is doing generally, but we still haven't turned the entire corner. This 2013 is going to be a telling year, and I believe as we go forward for the next 5 years, there's going to be a lot of activity in the state chartered bank area. We also regulate the credit unions in the state. For both of those areas, there's dual regulation with the federal government and then the state, and we work collaboratively with those regulators. We also license the mortgage companies, finance companies, and other financial institutions. Mortgage originators all come underneath that umbrella in the division. Again, that's under Acting Deputy Commissioner Mary Jo Wall's supervision at this time. Then we have the insurance division. Within the last couple of years, and when I started, Mr. Chair and members, the insurance functions had been dispersed throughout a variety of areas of the department. Some were in the financial services or financial institutions division, some were in different parts, and what I did is I reorganized them and brought them underneath what is the insurance division at this time. And that includes the solvency and financial regulation of the insurance companies, the rate and forms, the product filings that all the insurance companies file with the state are approved by the Department of Commerce, and a host of other activities. As Minnesota's insurance regulator, we focus and make sure that we have fairness and compliance with our Minnesota statutes. We license all of the companies that want to do business in Minnesota. We examine them for their financial safety, and then as well, my overriding goal, and I've said this many times when I speak, is that we work together in many ways with all of the history and experience that we have with financial institutions, with a partnership with the industry, and know that in all of these areas that it takes both the public and private sector to keep a healthy economy in Minnesota. The next division, major division, is the energy division.
Commissioner, on page 6, I think there's some of us that are kind of wondering what
it's going
are
on.
Are you breaking into that car?
I don't know. Is that in fact a state vehicle? Or what's left of it?
Welcome. Our last bill was the Health Insurance Exchange Commissioner, so we're still kind of ratcheted up for stuff like that. But it's a good picture. I did want to compliment you, by the way, on the this is for legislators' attention spans. This, and I'm not messing with you. I think this is probably the best one pager from a department that I've ever seen. It really is. This is something I'm going to keep, and that's saying something for, as these two guys will tell you, I seldom hold on to stuff. But whoever did that for you certainly demands ought to be commended for that. That's terrific.
Thank you, Mr.
Now back to what you're doing in this photograph.
This is very good, guys. If you can see in the foreground behind are all the downed trees. So this is Minneapolis right after the tornado. And I went out with all my staff, and we went door to door with disaster relief information. So I figure this particular individual would need to have a good packet of information on how to make a claim,
clearly,
for their insurance benefit. The entire back end of the car was completely damaged. So
I thought you had crashed into the car and were leaving a note.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I made that call earlier today. but in fact, that's one of the key part of one of the, let's just say, the improvements and things that I focused on when I started was to make sure the department was on the ground with disaster relief. We did the flooding in 2011. We went to the Minneapolis tornadoes. We beefed up our effort, and then within 24 hours, we had our information out to Duluth, the legislators, everybody in the area, making sure that they had the information for the disaster recovery. So that's what that photo represents. On the energy side, now this is a windmill, so we have, again, the focus though is to make sure that we have a reliable and reasonably priced while minimizing the adverse environmental impacts of our energy system. So the department works as a public advocate with all of the rate cases, all of the siting, the facilities for the utilities, for transmission lines, and then in terms of the forecasting and the resource needs for the generation and distribution of the electricity and gas for Minnesota. The staff is phenomenal. So they advocate on behalf of the consumers and the ratepayers and the proceedings. We have analysts on staff that go through all the data and information, working with the utilities and the Public Utilities Commission on a host of dockets. There's an extreme amount of activity and work that's happening right now, and that has been going ongoing for the last couple of years and will for the foreseeable future. We also oversee the conservation improvement programs, the CIP programs, operated by the public, municipal, and cooperative utilities. We also maintain the emergency planning and recovery plans for the energy sector and working with Homeland Security and maintaining sort of the monitoring for the emergency preparedness. And as well, we have our disaster response staff to go into the field whenever something should, an emergency basis. On the next page, we also highlight a few more major areas. We do the energy efficiency for building, conservation. We have staff that work on, in our energy, state energy office, the alternative transportation fuels, modern technologies, you know, the renewable fuels. We have staff that work on all sectors within the energy area. And then we also administer the federal programs for, as I indicated before, LIHEAP, the low-income heating, low-income home energy assistance program, and as well the federal weatherization program for Minnesota. Those we work we administer the grant programs. We work with local service providers, CAP agencies, to make sure that, that those dollars are appropriately delivered throughout Minnesota and all the communities throughout our state. So that gives you sort of the big, broad overview of energy. Along with energy, we have our telecommunications division. The telecommunications division, I'd say with sort of the financial sector, has there are federal regulators, and then we have a portion of state regulation of telecommunications in Minnesota. And primarily this is historical, but it's focused on the telephone companies themselves. We continue to advocate on behalf of Minnesota's the public interest before primarily the Public Utilities Commission, but we work with the Federal Communications Commission and others in terms of what's happening with telecommunications. We promote competition among the local companies in Minnesota. We investigate any issues, enforce those regulations, and then a key priority for the administration was to put together a team for broadband. We have some analysts and some of the technical folks at the Department of Commerce. So with that, the governor, in an executive order, issued basically three parts. One was to launch the governor's broadband task force. They just at the end of last year came up with recommendations. You'll see a piece of that in our budget. Secondly, the governor designated our department as the office of broadband development, and then third, designated three agencies as the lead agencies for broadband in the executive branch: the Department of Commerce, MNET, which was OET, and then the Department of Economic Development. We met collaboratively on policies and to keep each other posted in terms of some of the issues that are out there. The next is we work on the Telecommunications Access Minnesota, the TAM program. Many of you know that's delivering a lot of the services for the hearing impaired, the relay service, and some of the technology that goes to help folks stay connected to the basic telephone infrastructure. So the next area is a division unto itself. It's the enforcement, and within that there are four major sections. Again, Nancy Lepic is the assistant commissioner for the enforcement, working on compliance and market conduct. The broad areas generally include, for example, the investigations area. They have a broad range of licensees that and occupations that we regulate through enforcement on, including those that are listed: the insurance agents and brokers, the stock investment advisors and brokerage companies, real estate agents and brokers, debt collectors, mortgage originators, and there's appraisers. There's a lot of others that are in this bucket as well. The second major area within the enforcement area, which used to be its own agency within the state, is the securities division. I have worked to enhance the abilities, the examination, the analysis of that unit, so that Minnesota can meet its responsibilities in the securities area. So with the financial downturn came a lot of the securities scams and all of that happened. So with that, the department has not only focused on it for that reason, but to make sure that consumers, investors have the information that they need when they're picking and choosing their securities and all of that. One of the key features here is that under Dodd-Frank, the Securities and Exchange Commission transferred, called the Big Switch, enforcement or the examination and registration of investment advisors to the states. So what used to be the state responsibility, which was assets under management of $0 to $25 million, has been raised to $100 million of assets under management transferred to the states. And in order to meet our responsibilities, we've added staff to be able to do that. We work collaboratively with the industry to make sure that our examination program was transparent. We had public meetings with them and questions and answers, and have moved from a pilot stage program to sort of routine examination processes, which before that had been handled by the Securities and Exchange Commission, but now operate. You know, we do it here in Minnesota. The next area is market conduct and consumer complaints. The market conduct area is primarily focused on insurance area. These are major, you know, investigations, market conduct practices that we look at. We have a number of those pending, but that staff has been split off so that they're focused on those things. And then we also have, some members know, the insurance fraud division within our enforcement area, which is focused on the investigation of insurance fraud that constitutes criminal conduct. These are licensed police officers, and if I can just stop for a moment here, there's some great stories that our folks have done in the last 2 years. One of them was to take on one of the largest criminal gang operations in Minneapolis. Our investigators really dug into that, and as a result of that, resulted in these guys being arrested and convicted and now sitting behind bars. It's the Gustafson gang. And then there's other things that these guys have done. They've just done phenomenal work in the last couple of years. So turning into the administration division in our department, not only does the administration division provide sort of the core functioning, the heart and sort of the guts of the financial services that the financial aspects of our department and human resources, but we also have within that area a number of programs. So that area does or oversees, basically under my supervision as well, the licensing of the professionals, that's the insurance agents, real estate agents, etc. It also houses, we have the unclaimed property unit for the state of Minnesota. We also have, that's the internal operations. They do our management of our services and technical support for the rest of the department. And then as well, on the next page you'll see we have the Weights and Measures Division. Weights and Measures is, to me, the diamond in the rough in Minnesota consumer protection. And those that are familiar with it know that the agency is one of the first consumer protection agencies developed in 1885. It's headquartered in Burnsville, but it is responsible for ensuring the accuracy in all commercial transactions of weights and measures. So when you drive and you pull up to a service station, we make sure that the delivery of the fuel is accurate. We make sure that the scales in Minnesota are calibrated through our metrology lab. So pretty much any portion of whatever is being transacted in Minnesota commerce, if it touches a weight or a scale or is measured in one way or another, our staff calibrates that and checks on the accuracy for our commercial markets. This unit has precision scales, accuracy for temperature density, and measures things to the smallest amount to even the largest of train cars to make sure that they're calibrated. One of the most interesting things I learned was that our metrology lab and what we do in Minnesota is one of the leading weights and measures areas in the country, so that now North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, other states come to Minnesota to have their calibrations done by us in Minnesota at our department through weights and measures. The next slide shows that we also work on we manage the state's petroleum storage tank cleanup program. which works with PCA on remediation of the abandoned underground petroleum storage tanks. There's still a number of these out there. We work with the Petro Fund Board, and the staff is housed at the Department of Commerce. That gives you a pretty high level overview of sort of the major functions of the department. What I thought we would do next is give you the next set of slides, walk you through sort of the budget, the governor's budget recommendations, and I thought, well, I'll just turn it over to the numbers guy, and then from time to time may have a comment or two.
Commissioner, if we might, can we pause there for just a moment, just if there's any burning questions on that piece of the presentation relative to the operations, otherwise we'll turn to Representative Zitzky.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a quick question, kind of on the agricultural side of measurements and weights. So you do some of the weights and measures at elevators and some of those as well, and you kind of have things on a rotational basis, so you have someone that comes through and does one type of measurement, or is it, you know, like, are they specialized, or do they take care of all measurements within a region when traveling, or kind of how does that process work?
Yeah, there's think of it as the fuel side, and then as well sort of the metrology side, the weights, the scales, and all of that. We have field staff that are deployed throughout the state of Minnesota. They have light and heavy duty trucks. We go out. There's various schedules in which they go out and check either the gas supply or the all the agriculture areas. But also not only that, but sort of the distributors, the ethanol, the supplies, checking on all of that stuff in the ag sector.
Anything else? Any other questions at this point? President Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Rothman, are you aware of any movement at all from anybody to take equity indexed annuities and regulate them as securities? A few years ago, the SEC was slapped down pretty hard. Are they bringing that up again? Is there any movement to bring that back?
Commissioner Rothman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I think what's still outstanding is the legislation that was the annuity suitability legislation. So wherever that is this year, if you're specifically referring to that or...
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Rothman, no, it's just, you know, at some point I think the SEC is going to want a kind of a power grab, and they're going to want the income from regulating another source, and they wanted to call indexed annuities, which are clearly fixed, they want to call them securities so they could regulate them. So I'm not talking about the suitability part of it, but is there any movement by the SEC to come back and make a grab at that again?
Mr. Rothman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I haven't heard anything specifically, but what still is outstanding is the Dodd-Frank Harkin Amendment, I guess, in terms of, you know, how that plays into it.
But, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Rothman, I don't think that really has to do with defining them as securities.
Commissioner, anything else?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, originally I think that was a culmination of the effort before that, which
right.
was to consider Rule 151A, I believe is what it was called, which had by the SEC to say that equity index annuities were to be defined as, you know, equity products and therefore under the regulation. That effort was set aside in large part because of the passage of the Harkin Amendment, and that I haven't heard anything beyond, you know, recently in terms of an effort to change the dynamic of that.
But, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, if the companies act accordingly on their suitability, I think they would qualify, meet the standards of the Harkin Amendment at that point.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yeah, the Harkin Amendment has a variety of trigger points and options, and that would be potentially one of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Anybody else? Otherwise, Mr. Janke, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members, Tim Janke from the Department of Commerce. I'm the Administrative Services Director and CFO. I'll just start kind of walking through the slides, and I'm feel free to interrupt as we go if there's questions, I guess. The first slide here, the budget overview, is the governor's recommendation on our expenditure side. So you can see the total expenditures for the coming, these are biennial totals on the graphs here, is $454.5 million. As you can see from the pie chart portion here, the primary source of that, or the primary spending, is out of our Division of Energy Resources, $348.3 million. We'll get into a little bit more detail here and kind of specifically the programs that those dollars go to, but the biggest one is going to be the LIHEAP, the Low Income Heating Energy Program, at just under $300 million for the biennium. So beyond that, the bulk of the areas here aren't that big, and I'll kind of skip to the next slide, and we can talk about revenues. Our total revenues for the coming biennium will be $590 million. The bulk of that, again, is going to be in the federal funds, so $325 million of federal dollars coming in. Primarily from the LIHEAP program, as I mentioned, our weatherization program. Those are a couple of the larger ones. The special revenue accounts that you see here in the orange slice of the pie include our licensing, include our auto theft program, our fraud prevention program, the SIP, Conservation Improvement Program over in the Division of Energy Resources, some routing and siting work that are done in those areas. And then the other larger portion of our revenues are non-dedicated revenues here, $208.6 million over the biennium, primarily made up of things such as licensing revenues, unclaimed property, remittances, mutual fund fees, and fines and penalties. So those dollars go back primarily to the general fund. Moving to the next page, we'll do a little review of kind of revenues versus expenditures to give the committee a kind of a general view. You can see here on the bar chart, the general fund revenues for the coming biennium are approximately $208 million. And our general fund spending is about 46. So the general fund appropriations that are given to the agency are about $23 million a year. The agency brings in those additional dollars through the means that I had discussed earlier. In the red portion of the chart here is the all other funds, so that would include special revenue funds and federal funds. So expenditures in those categories are $408 million for the biennium, $382 in revenues. The difference there is we have some carry forward dollars that we'll be spending down this year and over the course of the biennium, and that's why the expenditures exceed the revenues in those areas.
Okay. Mr. Jenke, I think Representative Anderson has a question. Mr. Jenke.
Mr. Chair, moving on to the next slide. Basically, I wanted to just kind of identify for members a little bit of the programmatic areas where those dollars are being spent. So the charts here are going to be all fund expenditures. So it'll mix funding sources, but try to give you kind of a general flavor of which programs and where the majority of the dollars are. Within the Division of Energy Resources, is the Low Income Heating Assistance Program, as I mentioned, at about $298 million for the biennium, weatherization at 20, conservation improvement at 9, routing and siting at 6, the State Energy Program, which is another federal fund or another federal account, at 3, and then there's a number of other sources that make up kind of the all other, so a number of programs that kind of are under that $3 million mark. The bottom of that chart includes the Financial Institutions Division. They really have one general fund appropriation and not a lot of other activity there, so it's the bank, credit union, and mortgage exams, and it's primarily all they do, so they have the one $9.75 million line. Our Insurance Division, so insurance exams and regulation, is $13.8 million. We received a federal rate review grant kind of prior to the health exchange implementation. There was some federal, as another part of the ACA, there was some rate review dollars given out across the country. We were able, we'll spend about $2.3 million of those over the biennium. And then there's some other smaller accounts within the insurance division that total about $1.6 for the biennium. The last portion on the slide here is the enforcement division. So investigation and review is just under $8 million for the biennium. We have a licensed technology surcharge account that'll be about $5.8 million. Auto theft at 4.2, insurance fraud prevention at 3.3, and then all other at 1.2. Moving to the next page, our telecommunications area. The main regulation portion of that unit, the telecommunications regulation, is at $2 million. Those are general fund dollars that are assessed out to the utilities. The Telecommunications Access Minnesota provides either equipment or relay services for those Minnesotans that have some type of hearing or sight impairment, $9.6 million. And then the new governor's recommendation for the Office of Broadband Development, we called out separately here, and that's $500,000 over the coming biennium. And then at the bottom of that chart here, we have all kind of the other areas within the department. We have our Petro tank cleanup program at almost $21 million. A small portion of that, about just over $2 million for the biennium, is actually administrative costs, and the rest are actually dollars that will go out to remove tanks and our transfers out and other things for from the department. Our weights and measures division has approximately $7 million budget over the coming biennium. That primarily comes from a petroleum inspection fee that is imposed on gasoline sold at the wholesale level. 81 cents of that dollar comes to the department currently, and that funds the operations for the department, or for that unit. And then the last piece of the programs here are our consumer response licensing, unclaimed property administrative services area at just over $16 million for the coming biennium. And then there's just a totals portion chart on the side here to show you that get back to that $454 million in expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. Other Representative Anderson, you were the one on the list. Thank you for your patience. You had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jenke, can you tell me out of the what you've got here for the governor's proposal, how much is in fee increases? How many fees are we increasing under the governor's budget proposal for the department?
Mr. Jenke?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there is one fee proposal in the next slide here that we'll get to that is changing the appointment fee from $10, which is in current law, or which is a current appointment fee, up to $30, so a $20 increase per appointment. Those appointments are paid generally by the insurance agency, and it appoints those agents to for work or for to be able to sell for that company. So that fee hasn't been raised in approximately 12 years, I think, 10 years, something like that. So that's one item we have in here, as well as in weights and measures area, there is a fee increase for the kind of fee for service work that is done for that area, and that's a 30% increase for those fees as well.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner.
Representative Anderson, we were going to just go walk through that portion of it slide by slide and lay that out. We could do it that way or delve right into it if you want to do it in that order, whichever.
Yeah, Representative Anderson, is that right with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Rothman. I think it would be helpful just to kind of know how much revenue total that we're talking about that would be in fee increases from the two that you've highlighted here. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay. Mr. Jenke.
Mr. Chair, moving to the next slide is the first of the governor's change items that we have in here. So this is titled Agency Investment with Revenue Offset. So, as I mentioned, this the appointment fee is being increased $20 from 10 to 30, which will generate $4.5 million a year, or $9 million for the biennium. You'll see on the second line here of the chart at the top, the revenue increases are 4.95 per year. 4.5 of that comes from the fee increase that was mentioned. The other portions will be recovered. Many members may know, but we a lot of the areas that we currently have, we do work in current law, we're able to recover the cost that we have within those areas, and so the other $450,000 will be recovered through existing current law. That the fee was set, as I said, a number of years ago. It hadn't been changed in 12 years. It was the third lowest in the nation, and they range across the country from between $5 and $75 for that appointment fee. What the first line of that of the table indicates: $1.275 million of additional expenditures per year. And I'll kind of just give a general outline of what that is buying for the department and for the state. There, it's primarily additional staff for the department. It would be 15 FTEs. One would do mortgage analysis and review and work in our mortgage area. One FTE would be in the Division of Energy Resources and would work to expedite rate review cases before the Public Utilities Commission. Three of them would be in the, four of them, I'm sorry, would be in the securities area, three examiners and one audit director. Commissioner talked earlier about the additional work that's being done in the securities area, and that would beef up the work that's the ability to do that work. We'd have three staff in our consumer protection area, one internal auditor. We'd had an internal audit function before, and it's slowly kind of gone away with some prior budget cuts, and we'd like to kind of beef that up. We have enforcement, would have a couple of extra examiners in our enforcement area, and three insurance analysts in the insurance division. So that's kind of the funding, or what that funding would be used for. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, as well, that so the increase in those fees and then the offset of those expenditures nets $3.675 million to the general fund annually, or 7.35 for the biennium. Moving to the next slide is the unclaimed property compliance program. During the last budget session, the department was appropriated an additional $375,000 per year through the year fiscal 15 to increase our compliance program by approximately four FTEs. So the basic concept is having additional folks out there doing some auditing and compliance work would be able to generate additional revenues to the state, similar to what's been done with the Department of Revenue in the past. So we've had good success with that. The remittances have gone up substantially. They went up approximately $4.5 million last year, and I think we feel it's been a good program. So this proposal would extend that and make that a base appropriation with the offsetting revenues of 1.875, which nets approximately $1.5 million to the general fund annually.
Representative Hoppe,
do you want to wait? Ask it now?
No, I think that was good.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Janke, when we're and I have kind of an off question, but my first question is, why do we want to make this permanent? I mean, if we're looking at unclaimed property, wasn't this supposed to be have people do this, take a look at it, and it would sort of fund itself?
Mr. Janke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, the basis for this request in making these permanent is the monies that are received by the state are non-dedicated general fund monies, so they go back to the general fund and are used for other purposes, and this would give the agency the authority to have those staff in-house, and this gives us that ability to pay for them.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you collect the money, you just want to get your share. You want to get the money you're collecting rather than just have it go into the general fund.
Commissioner Rother.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, you know, it was interesting development last legislative session. This wasn't even actually the administration's request. It was the legislature's request to say, look, could you guys use additional help to, you know, make sure that the program is working well and in compliance? The idea was that with 3 to 5, something in that nature, staff, they'd be able to do the work and actually get the program into a better place so that there's compliance to get the dollars into the state. And so this would be just taking it and making it continue out into the, you know, out years, so to speak.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, maybe the committee would benefit from a 5-second thumbnail sketch of exactly what the program is and what it does.
Absolutely. If I can just, Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, the unclaimed property program originated, it's all states have it. Many states operate it through their treasury or the treasurer of the state. Minnesota transferred that to the Department of Commerce years ago. And in essence, any property that is escheats to the estate. So if somebody passes away, if it's a life insurance proceed, if it's something like a securities, some assets are left in safe boxes. People leave and forget that they have utility bills that they paid. That is their money, and the utilities are required to turn that money over to the state. So roughly, somewhere between, if you look at historical averages, oh, we have the data here. The historical averages are somewhere between, you know, 55 to last year, $63 million. That was one of the strongest years we've had in a long time of revenue of unclaimed property coming into this to the state of Minnesota. So that money comes in, it's deposited into the general fund. And then at the same time, the department has staff in place to return money to people who make claim for it. So again, those are policy beneficiaries, people that have, you know, make a claim for their utility bills, payroll stub statements that people are owed their money. So in addition to some of the stuff that we've been doing on the compliance side, we've also beefed up and increased the amount of work that we're doing on the outreach and education side to tell people that they have this money. There's missing money, to let them know they can call the state and find the money and turn it in. So we've done a lot of work. Generally, last year, I think the number is $19 million in fiscal year 2012, the amount that we returned to Minnesotans in that range. And it, on average, ranges in about the 30%, 33% that is returned.
Yeah. Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Rothman. I'll give everybody a story about this. I don't know how many years ago this was, 2 or 3 years ago, the department came to, I think, everybody in the legislature and said, if you have anybody with sort of an unusual last name, they came to me and said, hey, are you by any chance related to any of these other Hoppes? And it turns out my aunt and uncle were both, I don't know what it was, I don't know what the amount was, but they both had unclaimed property from the state, old life insurance policy or something like that, and they were both able to get their money back.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, there's some great stories here. The number is, I think, 1 in 20 Minnesotans have unclaimed property, and it's over $100 they're owed. And we try to get the word out as much as possible. And then Good Morning America saw the program, and they came in, and we did a program and out at Mall of America. Another good story is some family was owed well over $60,000, and we connected them up with those proceeds. So
I check every couple of weeks. I've never seen it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Janke?
Moving on to the next slide, Mr. Chair, this is a proposal for making some investments in our weights and measures area. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. The basic idea here is that we have a very most of the equipment or many of the pieces of equipment that we have out at Weights and Measures are at or near the end of their useful life, whether these be trucks or some other types of equipment that they have, and we want to invest in those to get those on a maintenance plan and make sure that we have a replacement plan as well for them. This one in the table here, you can see that we're increasing our special revenue fund expenditures by $276,000 a year, increasing our special revenue by $276,000, and we're also generating about $54,000 a year to the general fund as revenue. The revenue to the general fund, it's kind of a complex movement of funds here, but in essence, there's a couple pieces of it. We're changing the petroleum inspection fee that's currently in statute, and raising fees for the fee-for-service portion of this of the operation by 30%. Those were last set in 2003. They can range from something small, grocery scales that are 0 to 6 pounds can currently are charged $10 for that. The work that's done, they'd be going up to 13. There's larger things like railroad track scales and other things that would have a more significant impact. But realistically, we're kind of getting these things up. The folks who are paying these fees are the ones who are actually requesting the work to be done, and the fee increase as well is keyed to the gross domestic product increase since 2003, and that's where we got to the 30% fee adjustment. The second to last item is the broadband task force creating the Office of Broadband Development within the Department of Commerce. It's $250,000 per year from the general fund. This would, in essence, staff or hire a couple staff to staff that office, do some work with the Minnesota Fiber Collaboration Database and the State Dig Once program. Moving on to the actual last one. Which is a joint study with the Department of Natural Resources. This request is for varying dollar amounts over the coming years here, but it totals $400,000 of special revenue. What we're really asking for here is the authority to accept some dollars that will be passed through the DNR from the federal government. They'll draw down some federal dollars, pass them through us. We'll do a joint study on the effects of wind turbines on bats and birds in the state. So that's the essence here is we'll spend in this first biennium $250,000 and we'll receive $250,000 in revenues. And that gets me to the end of my portion of the presentation.
And Representative Anderson, question about bats or birds?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How'd you know? On the BAT study, it says that it's state matching funds for that. Is there a reason that we couldn't have used legacy funds? And I know maybe this is outside of your purview, but can you help me out on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not sure exactly how the legacy funds work. We haven't really been involved in any of those. What we're doing is we're using the federal dollars, and DNR is drawing those down. We're also using $170,000 a year of matching funds from our budget that we have current assessment authority for the utility. So we're joining those dollars up to do the study. So I'm not sure the interplay between the legacy funds and what DNR is doing.
Representative Anders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jenke, so it's $70,000 from the utility funds. Where do those funds, how are they usually used? I mean, what do you typically use those funds for?
Mr. Jenke?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, those funds are assessed out to utilities, and they're used for the routing and siting group within our agency. So they do, whether it be pipelines or transmission lines and those types of things, it's under their authority that they can do some baseline studies and other types of things, and that's what we'll be using as the matching funds.
Representative Anderson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one last question. I'm just kind of trying to add up the FTEs. Is it correct? So we had 15 FTEs on the first part, 2 on the broadband task force, and then another 4 for the unclaimed property compliance. Is that right, or is it just 15 total?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the 15 for the first item I talked about are actual new staff, as well as the 2 in the broadband office. The 4 in the unclaimed property are existing staff that would be retained.
That you're extending?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jinky, I have a question along that same lines. I'm looking at the all funds FTE by program that's in the governor's budget proposal. And it's got FY 2013 is 303 headcount. Then the forecast going to 336, and then the governor's recommendation up to 353. And I get the 15 new staff, and I got the 2.
Yep.
But where are the rest coming from? And I noticed insurance is one, and insurance is obviously a hot topic, going from 3 headcount to 39 headcount. So what can you kind of walk me through that?
This was a test to see if you were reading your material, Representative Woodard. Mr. Jenke or Commissioner.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, there's a few things going on here. The FY13 numbers, I think, that are shown here are low. So we would be more at about 325 FTE currently in fiscal year 13. The second thing that is going on is the commissioner has done some restructuring over the past year and has created the division of insurance within the department. Our functions in the kind of the core of what we're doing has not changed, but he's broken that up. And so what's shown here and not kind of well reflected is the fact that that division of insurance took some staff from our financial institutions area. It took some staff from our enforcement area and moved those folks into the insurance division. So you'll see that our financial institutions numbers have gone down from FY13, as well as our enforcement area has gone down simply because of those movements. Our administrative services area has increased because, as well as those other realignments, the licensing division and the consumer response division were moved out of enforcement and put into the administrative services area. So that reflects that increase. I mean, those aren't in the traditional sense administrative services. They're really programmatic areas that are just kind of housed within that admin division.
Representative Woodard.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on that, most of what you're describing then is just a reorganization effort to realign, I assume, to make this a little bit simpler from a program standpoint. But if we're, so the 303 is wrong,
yep.
And we're really at 325, plus the 15 gets us to 340, plus 2 more gets us to 342, so now we still have 11 people.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, the basic for FTE counts generally would be as on actual staff time spent. And so what we've done in the fiscal 15 would be projecting out that everybody we currently have is here full-time 100% for that year. And current year, we've had a number of vacancies, so those would be reflected in that lower number to start out with. So as I said, we probably had about, we have approximately 325 FTE. We approximately have maybe in the neighborhood of 10 vacant positions that we're working to fill or that have been vacant over some portion of the year. And we start off that forecast base for FY15, projecting those positions to be full and for that whole year.
Does that work?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just the final question then. So it's not an increase in responsibilities or doing anything new. It's just filling vacancies and reorganization that makes that difference.
Mr. Chair, Representative, correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Jenke or Commissioner Rothman? All right. Commissioner, anything else? Closing, parting comments, anything like that?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and for your time today. And then we always try to work collaboratively if there's any other questions that come up, however that works. And we're accommodating, we'd be happy to help in any way. So we just want to thank everybody for the work that you do and working on our budget and collaborate with you to get to a good result.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Jenke. Members, if I was going to point out the black handout books that we have. If you can leave those behind, we're going to use those as well tomorrow. And I think on behalf of the Commissioner, whether you're in the majority, minority, doesn't really matter. If you have questions for the department, I'm sure they'd be happy to hear those. I'm not saying that you have to share those through the chair, but you are welcome to do that as well. I'm curious to about what members are intrigued or interested in as we, for the first time, put together the finance side of our committee's work. Any input that you have or suggestions would be very welcome. With that, gentlemen, thank you very much. Members, thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow. We are adjourned.